You're listening to Song Exploder, where musicians take apart their songs and piece by piece tell the story of how they were made. My name is Tao Nguyen.
Song Exploder is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Thanks to Indeed for sponsoring this episode. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Song Exploder listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Song Exploder. Terms and conditions apply.
John Darnielle has been writing and recording songs as the Mountain Goats since 1991. He's released 17 studio albums and also written two books of fiction. In April 2019, the Mountain Goats released the album In League with Dragons, and in this episode, John Darnielle breaks down a song from it called Cadaver Sniffing Dog. We'll hear his original demo, and then hear how the song evolved at Blackbird Studios in Nashville, with the help of John's band, some incredible session musicians, and producer Owen Pallett. Also, stick around after the song to hear more from John in our new segment, Instrumental. Bring in the cadaver. Sniffing dog.
My name is John Darnielle. I am the singer from the Mountain Goats. I keep little notebooks. They're not that much bigger than a credit card, and I've been carrying those around for over 10 years. The notebook has grocery lists and it has notes I take if I'm watching a movie, but there's one page that just has song titles. I just write them when I get an idea. And Cadaver Sniffing Dog had been around for a while. I think it probably came at an airport. I'm in airports rather a lot and they have drug sniffer dogs and you're not allowed to pet them and it sucks because you want to give the dog a little pet, let him know, you know, he's doing a good job. They have to wear little yellow jackets that say like drug sniffing dog or something like that. And I had crime stuff in my brain, you know. So I had the title, and I am reasonably certain that it was Christmas Day, and I just started riffing with a guitar.
2, 3, and.
The way that I write, usually, is I'll be playing a riff, and I will just sort of ad-lib a line and go from there. And if this song is going to have that title, I was like, you know, a crime scene will be the obvious place.
Hustle up the spiral stair. If anyone's left up there.
So I had the riff, I had the couplet, and then I put down the guitar, and I sit there with my pen and notebook asking myself what happens next that makes narrative sense. So I ask myself, whose voice is this? Who's speaking? Right? So, well, okay, it's a crime scene investigator of some kind, or, you know, detective, right? What's he describing? Then I write a couplet in the same meter.
Teams on the scene from several stations. Everybody adjust your expectations.
And I went back and forth like that between the notebook and the guitar, asking myself questions that allow the rhyme to further explicate the line just before it.
Stray clumps of hair and blood and brain. Fragments of bone in the drain.
The speaker is looking at a scene of utter devastation. He's inviting the investigation to continue and insisting there must be dead bodies in here. That's how bad things are. There can be no question that if there's anyone in here, they're dead. And I am interested in what it's like to be that speaker, what it feels like to inhabit that speaker's skin for 3 minutes. It's a theatrical experience, essentially.
Rookies try to keep the airway clear. But the damage is too severe.
Sometimes the chorus takes a long time, but I knew I liked the phrase too much not to absolutely put it to work in the chorus.
Bring in the cadaver. Sniffing dog.
What a great thing to say. It's like I wanted to sing it a bunch of times.
Bring in the cadaver. and dog.
And I had the idea for the vocal harmony also.
Ringing the cadaver, the cadaver, sniffing dog.
And I really enjoy getting elaborate with the backing vocals in GarageBand.
Ringing the cadaver, the cadaver, sniffing dog.
And I remember it was nearing dinner time, and both kids are swarming me, but I kind of like the way that the tempo and the pace of the song reflects that I'm trying to get the idea finished as quickly as I can. So this is one of those songs where, unless I tell you what it's about, you're not going to know, right? We're looking at a wrecked room, bodies that are hardly recognizable, where you have to bring in a dog to determine where the body is in the first place. There's nothing in that that can telegraph to you that what I'm thinking about is a relationship where there's nothing left to save. It's a collapsing relationship song, but it's also in the guise of a noir, of a detective crime scene moment. That's the metaphor. And you could take the story at face value. But my assumption is that there will be some listeners who will intuit that, who will go, this song is actually about a relationship in which none of the motivating quality that brought these people together survives. This is a person checking for signs of life in something that is visibly dead. And that's always been one of the saddest things to think of for me, is like, when relationships collapse, a thing that used to seem worth preserving no longer seems worth saving to one or both parties. And if that's true for one party, it's necessarily true for both parties. It's just that one has the wrong idea about it, right? And that to me is a scene of great pathos. My parents divorced when I was 5, and my world cracked open when that happened. It was very, I remember the moment they told me. The first time I became aware that people separate romantically, it was a catastrophic moment for me personally. It was just horrifying to me because I had never thought of it before that. It was like, when you're 5, you don't think, well, maybe one day you won't live with one of these people. It's like, you don't. That wasn't on the table for me. And so I think, I always return to that. And so me and my band, Matt Douglas, John Worster, and Peter Hughes, and Owen Pallett producing, met at Blackbird. And we tracked this one first in the session because I wanted to make sure we got it right. So the setup is John and Peter, a drummer and bassist, are out in the big room with a baffle between them. The rhythm section is very deeply in the pocket on this track. It is locked in. Owen was really encouraging us to underplay a lot. So we went with something like krautrock, where it's the drums and the bass play exactly what they play, and they play it in a line. And me and Matt are playing the exact same acoustic guitar part. Often when you write something, you play, you sort of try and dress it up a little bit, play it as well as you could. But it sounded so nice to just like have Owen go, no, play less. Let the song be itself. We can add more stuff later. And so you get much more motoric style basics, which actually give you the freedom to turn the next layer into whatever you want. We tracked by ourselves for the first 2 or maybe 3 days, and that's when the other musicians came in and did other stuff. There was Thomas Gill, who's such a great musician. I do not remember which electric he was playing, but I have this pedal. It's by a company called Farm, and it's a distortion pedal. It's an overdrive. And the reason it's called Farm is the guy who makes them is a farmer, and he sells these pedals to help pay for, like, grain and stuff to keep the farm going. And he advertised one as Jerry Garcia 78 tones. I am the target market for this pedal. I saw that. I was like, really? You have a specific Dead tour whose tones you're trying to emulate, and it's pre-81. Then I am with you. So I said, Thomas, try this pedal. And he did, and he liked it as well as I did. The sound of it is real nice. And then I said, well, I've always thought we'd have a guitar solo here. And I want to play guitar solos desperately, but I am not a good enough musician to actually properly solo. And so we handed a guitar to Thomas and let him loose. With a guitar solo, you can be basically playing scales over the changes. But another thing you can do is have something to express the aggression of the song or to elaborate on the lyric. or to take the sentiment of the lyric to a place that language can't take it to by itself, which is what I think Thomas does in this one, that he just takes the violence inherent in the scene and takes it to this sort of no-wave downtown New York early 80s kind of place. He's rhythmic, but it's kind of choppy. We were all going nuts. The thing that's fun about having people play solos in the studio is everybody else gets to sit back and be in awe of the other musician, right? And that is so fun. This is our second album we made at Blackbird in Nashville. And one of the big reasons to record there is if you want to hire session musicians to play on your record, you will have them in any degree you want, and you can have them in at half an hour. And I knew that I was going to want to hire Robert Bailey. He and his dudes are the guys doing the actual backing vocals. And session musicians are the true stars of this industry, in my view. They can do anything. Every last one of those four guys are better singers than me by incomprehensible orders of magnitude. And it's very hard to learn how to go, you know, that's good, but if you did something a little different, because they're so good that you want to just say yes to everything they do. But I had already written the part on this one. And so we sat around and listened to the demo. And he said, is that what you want us to do? I said, yes, that's what I want, but I want you guys to sing it in four part. I think mine was in three part harmony on the demo. And so he stands there in the tracking room with his guys and he goes, okay, so bring in the cadet. Who wants that? I'll take that one. How about you try this? Bring in the cadaver. No, there's a unison there. And he looks at me and he goes, do you mind a unison or do you want all harmony? And I say, well, I want what you think sounds good. I'll try a unison. So they get an idea together, then they all go and stand in front of the mics. And what they did is they took what I wrote and made it 3D.
Bring in the cadaver. Sniffing dog.
You should see what it's like in the tracking room when Robert and his guys show up to sing. It's like everybody just sits back and just revels in the pure pleasure of music. These guys, they sing on Garth Brooks records, right? And to have them singing my somewhat strange lyrics is really fun. It's so great to be taking something that is strange and occupies a sort of strange space musically and then treat it the same way that you would treat something that had more commercial potential.
Bring in the cadaver. Bring in the cadaver. Sniffing dog.
With my vocals, my instructions were to not emote. And younger me would be, no, I must express my feelings, right? And so, but no, if you trade that desire to be expressive in the service of the song, you get it back doubled. If you actually serve the song instead of asking the song to serve you emotionally.
Hustle up the spiral stair. See if anyone's left up there.
It's probably my purest metaphor song ever in that I never offer any indication that it's a metaphor. I'm the last guy to find the metaphor in somebody else's song because I'm too taken in by details. But that's also my strength as a writer is like I have so much interest in the details that if I have a governing metaphor, I can make it pretty real because I can populate it with all these little things happening at the edges.
Wait till you come up on the smoking rack. And even then you check.
I don't need to emote about it. I can just tell you what I saw. The physical details seem to me sufficient to communicate anything else that the scene might need to communicate. And I can assume that if I give you a good enough description of what I saw, that the emotional reality or the spiritual reality underneath it will become manifest.
Veterans on their hands and knees. Nobody's ready for days like these.
I think the speaker here is an egotist. This is the funny thing, like when I start analyzing my own lyrics, I'm generally fairly critical of the narrator. It's like, to me, the solution to this narrator's problem is right in front of his face. He should start thinking about things other than his own reactions. This song, it was one of the ones I had flagged for strings because Owen Pallett writes string arrangements and plays. We did pre-production on a fair bit of this stuff, and he did guide tracks on a mini Moog in the control room just to indicate what the string parts were going to be. And then I think he liked them, and so he kept the mini Moog in. That's one thing you would never have gotten away with me earlier, is like, oh, let's see if this sounds cool and maybe keep it later. I've always been very much about think about your decision first, then play it, right? And with this record, I let Owen actually produce and make decisions like I'm going to lay down this thing and then later say, you know, it sounds kind of cool. Let's keep it. It was so awesome that I want to do it this way from here on out. It's like writing the songs, relinquishing control, handing them to a friend I know well, to Owen, and saying, now tell me what you hear in these songs. You tell us how to play them. It was really liberating for me. The strings were on like day 6 or 7, and I wanted to get a tattoo. So I booked a tattoo because I thought, you know, it'll be better if I'm not around to give input, if I let Owen do his whole thing. He has some people he works with in Macedonia, a full symphony orchestra, and he wrote charts by himself up in Canada where he lives, and then he had sent them to them, and they learn them and rehearse them, and then they hook up via Skype, and it's a fully conducted live orchestra. So I went, and I got a tattoo of a crab holding a pair of glasses in tribute to the time I was holding my 2-year-old in the ocean, and then a wave came and knocked my glasses off, and we joked that a crab had taken my glasses. I did that during the string tracking, right? So when I got back, Peter was like, oh my God, dude, it was the greatest. Oh, and I cried. I cried. My first ideas about music were about symphony orchestras. When I was 5, I wanted to be a conductor. It's such a high form of music to be able to hear an ensemble all at once in your head and do an arrangement like Owen has done. And then it's such an accomplishment to even play in an orchestra like that, to be able to subsume your own talents into the service of a broader vision. It's what makes orchestral music so beautiful, is that like it's an expression of human cooperation. As a lead singer type, as a guy who both benefits from and is burdened by his sort of native egocentrism, people generally just want to talk about my feelings about stuff. And like that to me is no longer interesting. I'm much more interested in the other musician's work. You know, there's some songwriters who insist that they told every musician every note what to play on their record. And I believe none of them. I don't believe any of that. Music is the story of people making something together that outgrows all of them and is bigger than them, and of which they should all be in awe.
And now, here's Cadaver Sniffing Dog by the Mountain Goats in its entirety. And after the song, we'll hear more from John.
Cadaver, stiffened dog.
Visit songexploder.net for more information on the Mountain Goats. You'll also find a link to buy or stream this song. Coming up, more John Darnielle for our new segment called Instrumental. In our segment, Instrumental, we ask artists about the tools that shape how they write, play, and think about music. Here's more with John Darnielle.
Is there an instrument you have that's been really important to you?
There's this Hawaiian guitar, and this is the most important instrument in the Mountain Goats development. So it has a place of honor for me. So I was working at Metropolitan State Hospital in Norwalk. I was paying off a court bill that I owed the state of California a lot of money, but I was also living in employee housing, right? And employee housing was already very cheap. And then periodically, like once a year, the union wouldn't see eye to eye with the state and we'd be out of contract. And then my rent would have to go back to whatever the rent had been prior to the first contract. I don't know how that worked. But so for several months a year, my rent would be like $31 on this studio apartment in a very old building that was on the grounds of the hospital where I worked. So I was paying down this court bill, but living on fairly cheap rent. And I didn't really have any expenses. I wasn't married. So when I'd get a paycheck, I would go shopping and my needs are modest. I would buy tapes. And at the shopping center, there was an instrument store, and there was not a lot of foot traffic in this store that had probably been in the strip mall for as long as it had been there, which probably would have been the early 70s, and this is the mid-90s in California. So, and it was just crammed ceiling to floor with instruments, like new Kima guitar from Korea, $71. I bought one of those, and those are actually that's the guitar you hear on the first tape. But the other guitar you hear on the first tape is this Hawaiian guitar that was up on a shelf. And I asked if I could see it, and they didn't trust anybody. You'd say, can I see that guitar? I said, you think about buying it? Well, yeah, yes. And say, okay, well, here, you know, that's a nice one. And I bought it. I didn't know anything about it. I wondered what makes it Hawaiian. It's basically a slide guitar, but an acoustic slide, right? So the strings are raised high enough that you can use a bottleneck or a proper slide to play chords. You tune it to a chord and you move the slide up and down, right? But it was a whole new magic world of sound for me. And I was writing poetry at the time. I wasn't doing the Mountain Goats, but I had extra money, you know, and I thought I bought this $50 guitar. And then I figured out that it was tuned to a chord so I could play 1-4-5, right? Standard blues progression and do something. And I didn't have any lyrics. So I grabbed a poem that I had been working on called Going to Alaska and just sang it over a very simple progression. And that became the first de facto Mountain Goats song. You can hear in that track how I don't have the 4 and 5 memorized. There's little dots to tell you where to go, but I don't know what I'm doing. This one only ever saw play on the first two tapes, and then I had sort of moved on. But it is the origin story guitar. It's the one I bought. I went, oh, I just buy this Hawaiian guitar. What do I care? and I wouldn't be sitting here today if I hadn't sort of made that rash decision.
Song Exploder was created and is executive produced by Hrishikesh Hirway. This episode was produced and edited by Christian Kunz. Carlos Lerma made the artwork, which you can see on the Song Exploder website. Song Exploder is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collective of fiercely independent podcasts. You can learn about all of our shows at radiotopia.fm. You can also find Song Exploder on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Song Exploder. And you can find me at Tao Get Stay Down. My name is Tao Nguyen. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.
If you're looking for another podcast to listen to, check out Normal Gossip from Radiotopia. They're coming back for their sixth season. If you don't already know the show, they were named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, and their new season starts April 17th. Normal Gossip is really fun. It's a show about petty and ridiculous and strange stories and the way that we share those stories. The stories that they tell in the podcast are sent in by listeners, and then they're anonymized and then retold to a guest. And then they have to weigh in on the decisions that the people in the story are making. It's very funny and very beloved. So if you aren't already listening, check out the new season, which starts April 17th. You can listen to Normal Gossip wherever you get your podcasts.